This is Mary Yost, editorial page editor of the Columbus Dispatch, and I'm meeting today with Columbus City Councilman Emmanuel Remy. He has been on council for a little while now, and he's going to be on the ballot in November for election to this seat. So welcome.
Thank you very much, Mary. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. So we would like to get to know you a little bit better today, learn what it is that you bring to Columbus City Council and why voters should put you back into the seat in the November election. And I know your background has a lot to do with the Northland area community. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So I guess you would say I didn't quite come to council in a traditional route, certainly not from a political standpoint, but from a neighborhood perspective. And so early on, I was recruited by several neighbors to get involved with my civic association and then ultimately pushed into the Northland Community Council and quickly was asked to become president of the Northland Community Council relatively soon after I showed up there. And so my predecessor, Dave Paul, who's very involved on the he chairs the Rex and Parks Commission and a number of other different organizations around town. He said, would you be president? I've been president for 5 years. And I said, well, wait a minute. I don't know anybody downtown. I don't know the mayor. I said it would be a disservice to the people to do that, but I'll be your vice president. And so had the opportunity to serve in that role for a year before becoming president and was fortunate enough that the people of that area asked me to remain for 6 years. And so, you know, it is the largest civic association within the city. It's a 130,000 people, 25 square miles, everything from Worthington to New Albany. A lot of people don't realize it stretches that far to the east. And so a lot of different, you know, socioeconomic levels in that community. You know, there's $500,000 homes off of Ulry Road. And wow. Then, you know, at the time, early 2011, 12, that era, there were, you know, were boarded up houses, especially because of the economic times that the country was facing at the time. So council was not on my radar. I'm a realtor by trade, very involved in the community, served on the board of directors of the Columbus Realtors, but had an email from a pastor in 2015 suggesting that I would make a good council member. And it was not somebody I knew, but he did attend my meetings. And I thought, well, that's an interesting idea, but it wasn't something that was intentional. But I thought, you know, maybe he's right. And so I went for that seat that Herschel Craig vacated back in 2015 and was fortunate enough to continue down that in that process when Eileen Paley was elected. And then the third time was the charm.
Okay. So when you came on to council, that was when Zach Klein was elected from council to be city attorney. So that was January of 18. So that was an appointment, but you had run twice before that.
Correct. I had the opportunity to showcase, you know, what we had done up in Northland, and I feel very proud of what we've been able to accomplish. The Morris Road SID, of course, went in in the mid-2000s, and certainly with the mall closing early in 2002, there was, I like to think of us as kind of like the phoenix rising from the ashes. We have finally infilled almost every vacant lot and building that was there this past year. And so it's a different Morris Road today, but it is a very successful Morris Road. There are 2,500 people that work at the corner of Morris and Carl when you include ODNR that make an average salary of $53,000 a year. And so when I was in that role as president, I like to tell that story and talk about the successes that we had, the fact that we were successful in closing down, you know, five motels within the Northland area and helped to push, you know, council at the time to enact legislation that created our hotel licensing law so that everybody in the city of Columbus can have the same opportunities when they have a crime-ridden establishment, that there's a process in place so that they can shut these places down. When we did shut those places down within Northland, and it was a collaborative effort between our police liaisons, the Department of Taxation, the fire department, there was, you know, a whole slew of people, code enforcement. That's why we were successful in going in as a team approach to really dissect what was going on in these businesses. But when we did that year over year, the crime reduced over 50% within those neighborhoods. So there were incredible results. We know that those hotels bred a lot of illicit activities throughout the neighborhoods. And so very proud of those accomplishments and what we've been able to establish. Not only is it looked at, you know, as a model within Central Ohio, but there's been other jurisdictions around the country that have come to Columbus to say, well, what did you do and how did you do it? And they're actually duplicating it. Indianapolis would be a good example.
Oh, great. One of the things that I really like about what I see along that corridor now is that there's a lot of new Americans that have really embraced the community and brought in their culture, and it has such a nice diversity to it now. Was that something that was fairly organic or more planned and purposeful? Talk a little bit about the diversity that we see there.
Absolutely. I really think that this is what one of the underlying reasons why Columbus is so vibrant and successful today is because of our new American population, new American immigrant and refugee population. What's unique about Columbus is that we draw from all continents equally. And so other cities may have a large Latino population or a large African population, but we tend to draw from all continents equally. I'm very fortunate to be in the area where they tended to, because some of the resettlement agencies are up that way, and because of the affordable housing that's available within the Northland area, a lot of them chose to live there. So it gave me the opportunity to work with so many great leaders throughout the community, and I'm very proud to champion this cause on city council, because, you know, we need to figure out as a city, how are we welcoming? And from a city perspective, what is the government's role, the city government's role in welcoming that? But back to your question, mm-hmm. on Morris Road. I mean, it just, you know, I remember Business First doing an article in 2017 that was part of the whole dialogue was the diversity along mm-hmm. The Morris Road corridor, from the Peruvian restaurant, you know, that to the Bhutanese Nepali restaurant. Momo Gar, of course, got a lot of national attention within Saraga. But there's so many great places, and it's something that we need to figure out, how do we celebrate this? Because it's not just something that Columbus should celebrate, the region and the Midwest should celebrate it as well. So always working with those business owners up there. If you've not had the chance to go into the Global Mall, for instance, and walk around and see what these merchants are doing up there, there's one that he says that he brings in some of the purest gold in the world.
Oh, neat.
The standards are different, and so he brings in a higher purity of gold. And so looking at some of the things that they have in their shelves, it's kind of exciting to see, and it's a really great experience. And everybody's very welcoming and friendly.
Does that translate to other areas of the city, or is it something more unique to the Northland area?
No, I think you will find that people are finding comfort zones in the east side, on the west side, and there are certain, you know, different segments of the population. You know, there's a large Somali population over on the west side. I think that they feel comfortable going into all of our neighborhoods. And, you know, anytime we can help to elevate small businesses and help them to be successful, we all win as a city, because that's really the backbone of really our economic environment within the city of Columbus.
So it's more a matter of recognizing the community that's there and supporting that. You can't make it one ethnicity or another. It's just kind of embracing what's there, and then how can we work with you? How can we recognize what you need? That kind of approach?
Absolutely. I think, you know, we have to be sure that they understand that there are supportive programs out there for entrepreneurs and for small businesses to develop and grow. And so, you know, it's really getting the word out and doing that. And, you know, even when there's could be some language barriers. So we want to make sure that everybody understands. It's an exciting time within Columbus. And you know, when I talk with people like Tom Katzmeyer at GCAC, and mm-hmm. I say, imagine how many artists that are living within the city of Columbus that we may not even know about today, because they don't know how to reach out to the GCAC, for instance. And Tom's very excited about, you know, the opportunities that exist, and has done some work in trying to reach out into those communities. But you have to talk with the leadership of these different ethnicities and different backgrounds, because they really have the pulse of their community. Sometimes they don't get involved the organic way that other people that have grown up in the city of Columbus might. And so we have to do some outreach to try to get them to understand all the great programs that are available, and possibly create new ones that actually would help to benefit them.
You mentioned growing up in Columbus. I did grow up in Columbus, and I'm going to date myself a little bit, but I can remember as a kid, so we're probably talking early 60s, maybe. I'm trying to think exactly when Northland was developed, but I remember driving with my family from, we were more on the east side, close to Gahanna, and we had some good friends in Clintonville. And we would drive down Morse Road when it was farmland, and there was a big sign that said, you know, new mall coming. And we just laughed. We thought that was hilarious that they were going to put a mall on this area. And now it's gone through this entire life cycle. How much of that life cycle have you witnessed? Have you been in Columbus all of your life or most of your life?
Yeah, most of my life. I did spend some time in Michigan, not at the University of Michigan.
Thank you.
It's clear, but went to college up there. But I graduated from Worthington, lived in Columbus at the time, a product of a single mother raising myself and my brother. And she moved us up along Worthington, Galena, Worthington Woods area. Mm-hmm. And so she actually, a little point, she actually dated the last general manager of the Northland Mall. Went before it closed. So we spent a lot of time over a couple of years getting to know him. And of course, Northland was vibrant and an exciting mall. I think it started out probably on that drive. You might remember there was an airport that was just to the north side, more towards Cleveland Avenue area.
Okay. But I don't remember.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of history. In fact, if you look at Sinclair, for instance, and Morris Road, at one point in time, Ford was going to own a great deal of that land and was going to put their assembly plant there that ended up in Northeast Ohio, Lorain.
Wow.
And so the Lorain plant. So if you can imagine what the difference would have been had that happened, it would have changed the dynamics of that entire Northeast side.
Absolutely.
But I have to tell you, being a realtor, I have some friends in my office that are in their 60s and close to 70 now. And they talk about when they first got married, they were looking at houses and they were looking between Upper Arlington and Forest Park. And at the time, Forest Park was the parade of homes.
Oh, wow.
And so their parents and everybody said, you're crazy for buying in Upper Arlington. You should be buying in Forest Park. And of course, they chose to go into Upper Arlington, but it is a completely different, you know, outcome today. But
very much.
But when you look at our suburban partners, I mean, they're landlocked. We're fortunate that we've been able to grow. And certainly, you know, the same, there's such a high percentage of people that are aging in place up in Northland, like there are around the city. And they have the opportunity, thankfully, to be able to stay in their homes. And so back to your Northland question, exciting that it had an exciting life, but obviously retail's changing at lightning speed. And I'm very happy with where we've progressed and had the opportunity to bring so many good workers into that area that are now shopping and enjoying some of those great restaurants and shops that we talked about a little bit earlier.
Well, and it's neat that you've seen so much of that life cycle yourself as well. Speaking of Forest Park, I know within the last few years, you know, with your background as a realtor, you certainly know this much better than I do. But my recollection is that has been one of those areas where people put their house on the market, and before they can get through the first day, they might have, you know, 100 people come through and multiple offers, even offers above the asking price. Is that still that kind of a market in that area?
Absolutely. I mean, Columbus is now the fourth hottest market in the U.S., but we were the number one a couple months ago. So it's been floating in and out, and we've been in the top 10 for quite some time. What's unique or special about that area is the affordability. And so a lot of first-time owners can come into that neighborhood and get a lot of space, you know, to raise a family with some, you know, yard as well. I happen to live directly to the east of Northland Mall.
Okay.
So I could walk there in about 5 minutes, at least the Ohio Department of Taxation now, but it used to be Macy's and formerly Lazarus.
Right.
But in any case, we on the south side there of Morris Road have been a really great recipient of the successes of Clintonville. People find that they can get equivalent type of square footage as far as the housing goes, a little bit bigger lot, you know, a lot of the lots over there on Jeffrey and Royal Forest and Beaumont, or not as much on Beaumont, but are 40 feet wide, you know, our lot's 60. And so, you know, you get a little bit more elbow room. You're not quite on top of each other over in Clintonville, but yet the prices continue to rise. So it's been, you know, again, first time buyers are somewhat can be priced out of an area like Clintonville, but they have the opportunity over in Northland to live in great neighborhoods. So very excited to watch that progress because it obviously has improved significantly since 2008-2009 era.
Right. We hear so much about the challenge of affordable housing in Columbus. And I know the city has recently in the, I think it's in the capital budget and in the bond package, there has been some activity to try to help address that gap of something like 54,000 homes needed for that in that affordable housing range. Are we doing enough for answering that call for affordable housing? What more needs to be done, and how do you see that being something that you need to work on City Council?
Well, I'm excited that my colleagues are like me, very mindful about this particular issue, so that somebody that wants to live in Columbus and work a living wage job has the opportunity to live in all parts of the city of Columbus. And so, like you said, we've been mindful with the bond package. We've been mindful in some of our recent legislation to help support affordable housing. But is it enough? No, because there's 54,000 people that are still looking for that type of housing. They need to be able to not worry how, you know, they're going to make their payments. And so we have to be considerably mindful when we go through planning for certain areas that everybody has the opportunity to live there. So I'm excited about some of the developers talking about mixed income developments. And so those are things that are relatively new to Columbus, but that have had tremendous amount of success on places like the south side of Chicago. And so you have people that may be from a lower socioeconomic means to somebody that has a high income job, and they're all living in one area, and they have shops and, you know, walkable neighborhoods. And so when we think about like the Linden plan and what we're going to do along the major corridor of Cleveland Avenue, you know, excited to see what's going to come out of that. So we're very mindful, my colleagues and I, on continuing to see that this is a high priority for us. And we want to make sure that, you know, we try to make living, you know, working neighborhoods for everybody within the city of Columbus.
It seems like one of the things that we've seen in the past, and my question is it different today? But what we've seen in the past has been, there have been a few times that developers have been given incentives, tax incentives, you know, tax advantages to come in and develop an area. And they've been asked to, you know, this is probably more on the economic development side, on the side of producing jobs with livable wages and that sort of thing. And then after a couple of years, we go back and look at it, and it's like, oh, they didn't quite hit the mark on providing the jobs, or maybe some of the jobs that they provided were contract positions. They weren't full employment with benefit kinds of positions. And there have been occasions that they were forgiven and they weren't asked to pay, you know, back the tax credits. Is council, you know, is the city going to be tougher on that going forward and not be so forgiving and hold the feet of the developers to the fire and make sure that if jobs are promised, if affordable housing is promised, that those things are delivered?
Absolutely. I think that since I've been on council, you know, this tax and the TURC, it's a tax incentive review committee that looks at these individual deals on a year by annual basis, and they see whether people are hitting the mark. I mean, one thing that I think is nice about Columbus is that we do performance-based incentives and not just handouts. Other communities will give money trying to get people to come here and that sort of thing, and we're doing these performance-based incentives. And so with these incentives, we are holding them accountable now. Andrew Dyer is one of my legislative research people that I rely on for this information, who actually sits and is a representative of the city on the TURC. You know, he lets us know if we have somebody that's not meeting the mark, and we've changed those incentives, or we've completely taken them away in the last 17 months since I've been on council. And we're going to continue to be very thoughtful and making sure that people live up to exactly what they say they're going to do. We have to make sure that, you know, everybody's winning when we're doing these types of incentives, and that we're bringing good paying jobs to the city of Columbus. But we have to make sure that they're living up to what they're saying and what they're promising up front.
Great. We will look forward to helping, you know, you hold people accountable on that. We talked a little bit earlier about your path to your seat. You ran twice, but ultimately your path onto city council was similar to a lot of other council members that we've seen in recent years, of being appointed. And we hear people in the community who question whether there's too much control for the city's governance in the hands of a few people because of those appointments. How do you view that, and what's your take on how that may change, or if it will change going forward?
It's a real challenge. You know, when we have a vacancy on council, to hold a special election in Columbus, it would cost over $1 million. So as we know, there's been vacancies created over time. And so to think about every time we did that and spending over $1 million of taxpayer dollars, it's kind of mind-boggling. And so, you know, I think one of the things that we looked at this time was, and I know for myself, I have no higher political ambitions. Voters willing, I want to be somebody that somebody can rely on 10 years from now. I certainly believe that there needs to be some continuity on council. And I believe that my colleagues are all in the same boat on that. And so we were very thoughtful when looking at the candidates that came forth this time around and getting their commitment to stick around. No contracts are signed, and of course, we all have to run. But right. We certainly, you know, I think that helps in this situation. But, you know, I believe that from what I've witnessed, I've been around council for a long time, many different council members throughout the time that I was a community leader and representing my neighborhood. I've noticed that this council is particularly thoughtful. We are very thoughtful in this instance of where somebody could complement and fill a hole that we might perceive that we have as a body. And so I'm very excited that we all have individual strengths that really add to a full complement of the entire body. I'm proud to be the neighborhood guy and also leading the charge on new American immigrant refugee situation. You know, they're making sure that everybody feels welcome here in the city of Columbus, but certainly everybody has a strength, and that's kind of the exciting part. If the body wasn't doing that, I would be concerned as a voter, but I would say that this is a very thoughtful council and wants to make sure that there is a full complementary body for the entire city of Columbus.
How do you, you definitely do have the neighborhood background, and so I would think the people of the Northland community feel very fortunate to have you having moved from the Northland community system now to city council. But what about the other communities? How does council ensure that those voices are heard?
Well, it's our responsibility and it's our role to make sure that every person that lives in the city of Columbus feels represented. And I certainly articulate that every time that I'm out in the community. I let them know that even though I live in Northland, you know, I've driven every street in the city being a realtor. I've sold houses in every neighborhood in the city of Columbus. I do understand their community, and I certainly understand what it takes to lead a community. And so when you look at environment, one of the things that I chair, I'm also over refuse and taking care of litter and illegal dumping. And so, you know, I met Lisa Boggs on the hilltop probably in 2011 when I was listing a house on Ogden just down the street from her. And no one is more passionate in this city probably about cleaning up an area and continually fighting that fight to make sure that, because it's kind of the broken window theory. I mean, if the place looks bad, then. So we're working very, very hard. You might have seen, maybe not, but we just had a contest with Columbus City Schools.
I did see that.
To do a mascot, Cleaner Columbus litter mitigation mascot. We're very excited about that program. And Jayla from Fort Hays, she did a great job of developing Scarlet the Cardinal. But, you know, I think putting out a significant PSA campaign, a public service announcement campaign, where we heighten awareness. I think that there's been generations that have not been told over and over again that littering's wrong. You know, I think anybody that drives a significant amount of time can see cars sitting in front of you literally dump an entire bag from McDonald's or Burger King. It's
right. What's that about?
Right. I mean, it's mind-boggling. I mean, if you're old enough, you remember the Indian crying and you know, the campaigns that used to go on back in the day. But not only that, we have people that come into our city and illegally dump. And so, you know, I think we took some significant steps last year. I was happy to join the mayor in pushing through some of the initiatives that we have. We now have 3 crews that are continually roving up and down our alleys to make sure that they're picking up illegal dumping. And we also have a significant camera program working with the Franklin County Environmental courts and making sure that we're prosecuting these people that we find that are illegally dumping. And we're going to continue to work towards that because we need to put a stop to people that come into our community and think it's okay to dump construction materials, et cetera, just because we have 300-gallon bins. And so even that, right. You know, we're working to change as much as we can from 300-gallon to 96-gallon collection in the front so that people have ownership over the trash containers that they have and not it's not a communal thing anymore.
Great. So we've talked a little bit about the redevelopment of areas like Morse Road. We've talked about making sure that when incentives are granted for development, that deliverables are delivered.
Matt, yeah, for sure.
So what are some of the other challenges that you see being the focus of Columbus City Council the rest of this year going into 2020?
Well, you know, we have some things that obviously we're in the midst of a police chief search. I'm happy with how the mayor and the administration's looking on a broad basis to make sure that we have the very best candidate leading our police and safety forces here in the city of Columbus. With that, you know, I'm very pleased with how Chief Quinlan, the interim chief, has been handling reorganization within the department and making sure that the training is second to none. And so I know it's his priority to make sure that we have a world-class police force. I will say that I also think that the safety commission and those that are involved with the search is really putting it out there in the community so that we are bringing the very best candidate, you know, into the city of Columbus. I'm excited. You may recall last year I was able to fund a police app that will be coming out at the end of June. We're hoping to have it out. June 27th is the date, which this might air after the fact, but certainly the mobile PD app, which will put in the hands, it's a community engagement tool that will put in the hands of every citizen in the city of Columbus that is willing to download it, the opportunity to submit tips either anonymously or with their information, talk directly with police officers, exchange chats back and forth. We really believe that, as we've seen in other cities that have adopted this type of technology, the tips have increased 1,000% in many cases.
Wow.
It's incredible. But, you know, along with our spot shotter technology, we want to make sure that we're really bringing our police force into the 21st century. And you may have noticed also that we've put $3 million towards a real-time crime center. And so, you know, that's in development because sometimes when there may be a deficiency in manpower, technology can help to leverage. It'll help to improve the gap. Technology can be a real equalizer, in other words. So I know that I'm working with Councilmember Brown, who chairs the safety committee, because this is a particular interest to me. We want to make sure that every neighborhood feels safe. Every neighborhood feels represented by our police force and our safety forces. So definitely an interest of mine and something that will probably take up the rest of this year and into next year.
I have heard the references to the real-time crime center, but I will confess, since we're talking about police, my confession is I don't understand exactly what that means or how it works. You said it's technology-based, but what is a real-time crime center?
When you really get into a real-time crime center, you have the opportunity to hire crime analysts, people that actually went to school to watch cameras, for instance, and see crimes as they occur. They may, for instance, get a live feed of somebody being pulled over, and they're cross-referencing social media. They're doing analytics to try to find out what the threat is and also to prepare the officer that's approaching for what may come of it. One of the things that's we're working on right now and something that I am very proud that I introduced to the city prior to being on council was Project Greenlight out of Detroit. And Project Greenlight, the problem that I saw as a community leader was that real-time, the police cameras that we put up around the city, mm-hmm. they actually have a significant cost. It's about $50,000, and continually being told that, well, we just don't have the budget for it in your area. So with Project Greenlight out of Detroit, we will have a different name for it. I think they copyrighted it, but okay. It started in 2016. And they were able to put real-time, or they were digital cameras, high-definition cameras on.
Okay.
It started out with 8 service stations around the city of Detroit that were in high-crime intersections. They placarded them as Project Greenlight in conjunction with the Detroit Police Department. And analysts then were watching those cameras. And then when crimes occurred, they were able to call police in. Well, by the summer, I think it had gotten to 34 stations. By 2017, it had grown into the hundreds of stations. Wow. In fact, the community started to lobby different establishments in order to do it. And then Mayor Dugan had proposed that any establishment that was open overnight would be required to have them. But all of the expenses are incurred by the station. So there's an investment of $5,000 to $6,000 in order to get these, you know, the right type of equipment. And then the feed's monitored by a third party. And then when there actually is a crime that's committed, it's fed to the police department. So
is it a business in the area that would invest
Correct.
That money to bring the cameras in?
Correct, yeah. So we're not there yet with rolling it out, but it is we're close. And it is something that I think everybody can be proud of and bring to the, but anyway, you can look it up in Project Greenlight in Detroit.
Okay.
It's a really neat program that's been very successful up there, and we hope to be rolling that out here soon.
It sounds a little big brotherish, but, you know, probably also what we need in this era that we live in this time, that more eyes can give us more safety. All right. You mentioned the police chief search, and I think the initial couple of public meetings didn't draw in as many community members to provide feedback as might have been hoped. I mean, how can we get the community more involved on the front end so that we end up with the right input and not complaining on the back end of whomever ends up being chosen as the next chief?
That's a really good question. I think, you know, continual outreach for us, you know, we have been a thoughtful council about having different meetings around the city, you know, where we take the council on the road mm-hmm. every month in different parts of the city. We've got to continually be asking people to show up at these meetings, because we certainly don't want it to be, you know, something that's talked about after the fact. Really, this is a great opportunity for every member of this, you know, every citizen within the city of Columbus to have input and to say exactly what they see their vision of the next police chief. And we want everybody to have that opportunity to speak. You know, it's kind of like voting. You know, if you don't vote, it's, you know, you shouldn't be sitting around complaining. I mean, you know, you have right. this opportunity, and it's our right to do so. And we really hope that we can get more people. But, you know, for on our part, just making sure that people are aware, continually publicizing it at our meetings. And certainly we have our neighborhood representatives, mm-hmm. our liaisons that go out there, want to make sure that they're continually publicizing it so that more people know about it and can make time out of their busy schedule to give their input.
And I know we've commented editorially that we're glad to see that there is not a rush.
Right.
There doesn't appear to be, you know, we've got Chief Quinlan, who, as you said, is making good use of his opportunity as acting chief to work on training. And I think it does make sense to take the time. And if it's December or January before we have, you know, a new chief chosen, you know, that's fine. We're going to have lots of input, hopefully.
Yeah, I hope so too.
What have we not talked about that you want to make sure that we hear about you today and about your contributions to Columbus City Council?
You know, I think that I really do feel blessed to have this opportunity to be able to listen to people's concerns and to our residents that are trying to make their life, you know, as best as it can be here in the city of Columbus. And so I'm not taking this for granted, and I am working very hard to make an impact. I certainly know from that community leadership lens what it's like to be advocating and working hard. And I continually am reminding people that may have long tenure in government, for instance, that for some of these people that bring their concerns to us, this is their number one issue in their life. And it's very emotional for them. And we shouldn't take it for granted, because we've heard this many, many times before, for instance, that this is just another complaint. To that person, to that citizen, this is their most important. And we should consider every one of our constituent concerns in that manner. You know, I am somebody that am very passionate about education within the city of Columbus. My wife is a 16-year veteran of Columbus City Schools. My three children go to Columbus City Schools.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that we're doing everything in our power as a city, as a community, that our kids within the school system have the opportunity to succeed. And so as we move and try to do more from a pre-K perspective, many areas within the city, we need to go even further. And we've got children that come to school hungry. They come home after school with snacks and food in their pockets from the day at school, many times to an empty house because their parents are working 2 to 3 jobs in order to succeed. And so what programs can we work, you know, with our partners like the Boys and Girls Club and the YMCA and work collaboratively to make sure that there's a seamless transition into after school care or that morning care? My kids go to Latchkey, for instance, and I know when my son and my kids are complaining to me that they actually make them do homework.
Heaven forbid.
I knew that we chose the right school within Columbus right. City Schools because they don't go to the same Latchkey as where they actually go to school. So okay. I sent them at a different one that's closer to our house, and they actually make them do homework. But Latchkeys is something, for instance, that I don't know that everybody in the city of Columbus realizes that Columbus City Schools offers Latchkey with 20, 25-year veterans of, you know, sometimes they're fully trained teachers that and certified teachers that are running the Latchkey programs or the pre-K programs also as well. So we really have enjoyed the opportunity to watch them flourish and have that extra care during the day. But there's so many people that need to either be made aware or we need to expand those services so that we're making sure that every kid and youth within the city of Columbus has the opportunity to succeed.
Right. What age range are your kids?
So I have a first grader now, a third grader, and a fifth grader.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. My kids are all 2 years apart within 12 days of each other. So,
goodness.
From March 31st to April 11th, we have a big birthday celebration within my household.
Nice. Well, Emmanuel, I think we've covered most of the questions that I had, and hopefully you've had a chance to offer what you thought it was important for us to hear. Is there anything that we haven't touched on?
I don't think so. I think that, again, my colleagues and I are trying to be very thoughtful, trying to be as accessible as possible for every resident in the city of Columbus, as responsive as possible. And I'm happy I like to brag about my staff. I think I have the best staff on council. I'm sure some of my colleagues might disagree, but, you know, we're very mindful when people call in because although we all have individual committees, we will take anybody's call about any issue within the city. We're all here to represent, and no matter what the subject matter is. And so really excited to be in this position and hope that the voters see that and also will allow me to stay in this position. This is something that's, you know, really I'm really passionate about, and I'm really excited to be here. And so we want to make sure that we continue the continuity between, you know, myself, Rob Dorans, Shayla Favors, Liz Brown, of course, Emmanuel Remy. I wouldn't be a good politician if I didn't say that.
You have right? to say your own name. That's right.
That's right. I'm learning that, you know, to continually say my own name. So, but certainly this is about the residents of the city of Columbus, and we're working very, very hard to make sure we're very mindful and thoughtful that everybody has the opportunity to succeed whichever neighborhood they're in.
All right. Well, Emmanuel Remy, thank you very much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Mary. It's been a real pleasure.